This is Mythical.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
There are three certainties in life: death, taxes, and a recipe that inexplicably calls for bay leaves and you never have bay leaves. Does it really matter that you don't have bay leaves? Because do bay leaves even do anything? This is a hot dog is a sandwich.
Ketchup is a smoothie.
Yeah, I put ice in my cereal, so what?
That makes no sense.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
A hot dog is a sandwich.
What?
Welcome to our podcast, A Hot Dog is a Sandwich, the show where we break down the world's biggest food debates. I'm your host, Josh Scherer.
And I'm your host, Nicole Hendizadeh.
Nicole, today we're talking about one of the most ubiquitous ingredients in all recipes, one of the most controversial.
I know. Do you know what I hate?
What do you hate?
When bay leaves.
I don't get it.
What?
You hate bay leaves?
No.
You,
and bay before
the,
anyone else.
The laurel bay tree that creates.
No, it's a colloquial term made popular by the internet.
Bacon and egg bay.
No, before anyone else.
Is that actually what bay stands for? It's before anyone else?
Yeah, but it's also a way to say babe.
It's short for babe.
It's both.
That's one of those things I don't agree
who
with.
You ask.
I don't. Anyways, point is, we're talking about, do bay leaves actually do anything? Because so many people have hit us up asking, mm-hmm. like, if I don't have a bay leaf, can I still make this recipe?
Oh, man. Well, I think bay leaves do something. They do some things well.
Wrong. No, no,
Josh.
It's a conspiracy from Big
not.
Leaf, a division of Monsanto. The bay
Stop.
Leaves are solely there because they are surveillance devices of birds, which are actually spies
Stop.
For the government.
Josh, do not start with the bird spy government talk. This is not the place. Nor
oh,
the
this
place.
Whole podcast is going to be about birds spies for the
it.
Government.
I don't want it.
Have you
no.
ever seen a bird's heartbeat?
I've never
they
held
don't have
a bird.
One.
I'm kind of low-key scared of birds a little
oh, really?
Bit.
Yeah.
There was a period of time when I was super scared of birds. And then one time this is what I did. I like forced myself to be okay with birds. So I sat down on a bench with bread and I fed birds to get over it. I'm a big fan of like, what is it called?
Exposure therapy?
I give myself so much exposure therapy. I have no idea. Okay, but no.
Maybe bring in the birds.
Oh, man. Okay, stop. Bay leaves do something. I
yes.
know this because I have, okay, I personally have baked and cooked and done multiple things with bay leaves. It does not make or break a recipe unless the recipe calls in the title bay leaf blank
mm-hmm.
or blank with bay leaves. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. No, I do know what you're saying. And that's closer to my true feeling about
mm-hmm,
bay leaves.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe they do something. They
yeah.
simply wouldn't exist if they don't do anything.
Yeah, they have a point.
They've existed for thousands of years
sure.
in recipes. I mean, you can go back to ancient Roman recipes. And I mean, they are used ubiquitously in so many cultures. I love making Filipino stews at home. You know, I love my
sure.
apertada, my caldereta.
Sure you do.
I love my ginatang. Big fan of chicken
adobo. Is ginatang
adobo.
The blood one?
No. That's dinuguan.
Dinuguan, sorry.
No, ginatang. Oh, it's a type. It's like a fish in turmeric.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah,
oh, my God. So good.
That sounds really good.
But anyways, my favorite use of bay leaves is in chicken adobo.
Okay.
And the reason, and I will chock it full of bay leaves. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I'll probably add, you know, maybe six if I'm making a couple pounds of chicken.
Okay.
In there. But the reason I love bay leaves and chicken adobo specifically is because it's a very simple dish. It's vinegar.
Correct.
It's soy. I do garlic, onions, and peppercorn.
Delicious.
So, like, there are only, like, four kind of flavor components, right?
Okay.
You have like acid, you have umami, and then the actual aromatics, garlic, onion, peppercorn, bay leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that bay leaves will shine. Not only do they do something, but they will shine in recipes that don't have a ton of ingredients.
Like if there's mirepoix in a recipe, for people that don't know what mirepoix is, it's a combination of carrots, onions, celery.
Mm-hmm.
If a recipe calls for mirepoix, do you think a bay leaf is necessary?
I don't think so, but a recipe that's calling for mirepoix is probably also calling for other things that are similar to bay leaves.
Sure.
So I guess this is why I think people don't think bay leaves do anything. It's because
uh-huh.
typically if somebody is making, say, like a beef stew recipe, right? It'll be like, throw one bay leaf in there amidst...
yeah.
thyme, amidst rosemary, amidst oregano,
a bouquet garni, if you will.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you have one bay leaf competing against like 90 ingredients in 5 pounds of beef chuck. No, you're not going to taste it.
Yeah.
And if you did a side-by-side blind taste test of beef stew with a bay leaf and without, uh-huh. I don't think anyone could actually taste the difference in most recipes. There are some people who argue. I've heard people say that bay leaf, quote, rounds flavors.
Interesting. Okay.
Which to me, I don't know. I don't believe that there is like alchemy in cooking, if that makes sense.
You don't.
I think so, okay.
I'll believe
in let's call it traditional wisdom as opposed to alchemy, right? If somebody has been putting a bay leaf in a recipe for 300 years and that recipe's been dating back from their grandma and their grandma's grandma and their grandma came from the Azores small island chain off of Portugal. I don't know why I went there.
I dated
an Azorean girl in college.
Cool.
She was
We should go to the Azores.
That'd be chill. Anyways, point is, if you've been doing that for like generations and generations, I think there is valuable sort of wisdom in that.
Sure.
However, I don't think that people typically have the correct explanation for why people do things, right? Think about the way when people say, like, soak your livers in milk. And people have all these explanations as to why. The milk
purifies.
The milk purifies it. It draws out impurities. Yeah. And then you go, what impurities? Can you name one? And they go, run.
So you think bay leaves are an old wives' tale?
No. Okay. I think bay leaves add a subtle, fragrant, floral flavor that is a freaking delight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are recipes where it can truly stand out.
Sure.
At worst, it doesn't do anything and you've wasted 3 cents on a bay leaf.
Sure. That's my mentality too.
Yeah. So I think it's somewhat of like an old wives' tale. I think a lot of like this add a single bay leaf can be just sort of for tradition's sake. And in a blind taste test, people wouldn't taste. And again, I'm talking about the one bay leaf recipes because
that's
what they all are. Unless you're really making bay leaf the star, there are these things where there's one bay leaf competing against a million ingredients and you're not going to taste that. And you can absolutely omit the bay leaf in that.
Sure. I don't think it makes or breaks a recipe, but Mindy made an amazing point that my own mother also follows, where she says, my mom always keeps a plastic bag of bay leaves in the kitchen. She throws those things in almost every single Filipino dish. She says it helps get rid of gaminess in some meats and adds more savory flavor to stews and soups. And I agree with that because my mom does the same thing. Well, in my culture, what we do with our meat whenever we're making stews is first we cook the meat in water. And salt. We put salt on it. Then we put water, and then we might add a bay leaf or an onion.
Do you drain the water? So we blanch
our meat in our culture.
That's what gets rid of the gaminess, not necessarily the bay leaf.
Okay.
This is what I'm talking about with like there is tradition, and a lot of people might not know the exact science behind that tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the liver and milk thing, people say it draws out the impurities. I think it was Harold McGee did a really good study of this. And what he found out that milk does to liver, it makes it taste like milk. That's it. There's no alchemy.
Really?
And people like, milk is a good taste, and it doesn't taste like liver. Liver has an incredibly gamey, metallic funk. I love it too, but you soak it in milk, the liver physically absorbs some of the milk, and it makes it taste like milk.
Porous.
So it's not drawing out impurities. It's adding milk flavor, which is a good flavor.
We should do it with beer.
I
want to do beer-soaked livers.
Why?
And I want to fry them.
Why?
I don't know. I want my liver to taste like beer.
I guess. I do that too.
Like how people say you're pickling your liver with alcohol?
I actually want
to pickle it with beer.
A physical, it'd be like a PSA, like an anti-binge drinking PSA. Like, this is your chicken liver soaked in milk. This is your chicken liver soaked in Estrella Jalisco. I don't know why I immediately went to Estrella Jalisco.
I think you must be craving one.
I think I drank a bunch of Mexican beer on 4th of July.
That makes sense.
A very American thing to do.
Yeah, of course.
And I had a great time.
Best beer. What about recipes that like exemplify, like they're just like pure bay leaf? So when I was in culinary school, one of the first baking recipes that we learned was a bay leaf bundt cake that I made in school.
Is that a David Leibowitz recipe?
It is. Oh my God.
That is the... And we were just talking about how we're such crappy food nerds the other day.
Yeah, what was the joke you made that just made me like so happy
okay.
to be there?
Yeah, let's run back this inside joke and alienate half our audience. Let's do it. We're going to do it, Maggie. All right, so We were shooting a TikTok and I made a breakfast ramen and I was helping clean up because I'm a very nice boy.
Yes, you
and
are.
I poured, I strained off the liquid so we didn't just pour liquid into our trash can. And then there was a bunch of ramen sitting in the strainer. And I said, look, Nicole, now it's breakfast mazamen, which of course is a Japanese dry ramen in a bowl. And Nicole and I, and Trevor and V didn't get it because they're not, like, they're great cooks and no food.
But they're not the biggest dorks in the world like
yeah,
you and I.
Yeah, correct. Great. We made like the equivalent of like a foodie dad joke.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like those chemistry jokes. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like that was like a food chemistry
joke. Like what did the glucose say to the nitrous oxide?
Helium.
Helium. And I'm like, I don't know. I failed chem.
Never took chem. Never got there. Only environmental science. That was my peak.
All I know is one of the sugars spells out nacho.
Salt is knuckle. Okay. Back to this bay leaf bundt cake recipe. I was the biggest, like, anti-bay leaf person. Like, what's the point? When I tried this recipe, it all made sense.
Yeah.
The bay leaves were perched on top. They were baked within the bundt cake. When you flipped it
did
over.
You left the bay leaves in the bundt
cake?
You're
supposed to leave them. Oh, you're supposed to put delight. Them on the top. Like, well, when you flip it over, it's on the top. Mm. And they're baked in, and it has this beautiful perfumey flavor. You enhance it with orange peel. And it just made sense. It's like, this is a flavor I've never experienced before. Because, like you said, bay leaf is it's like an adjacent addition. It's like not the most important flavor in a stew, in a more complex dish. But in this recipe where it really exemplified the flavor of bay, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a trip. This is a flavor.
It's kind of life-changing.
Yeah, it's like, this is a flavor that exists. Holy cannoli. Have you ever tried fresh bay leaves before?
Yeah.
What do you do with it? I've never done, and I see it, and I buy it, and I keep it in my fridge for like weeks, and I never use it.
I mean, to me, fresh bay has a much more pleasant flavor. I feel really? Like a lot of the bay leaves, this is another problem that people are getting just kind of dried in stores. I mean, sometimes drying can intensify flavors, et cetera. But to me, it doesn't intensify. It changes, right?
Turkish bay leaves are like really famous, no?
Yeah, they are. Yeah. There's like California bay and then Turkish bay is really big. Thing I did with fresh bay leaves, Nicole, and this is one of those life-changing little recipes. Got the idea from Mercedes Saucedo of Casa Coco Ice Cream, the ice cream that I've been obsessed with.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she made a salted caramel bay leaf ice cream, and you really like... You get the salt and the caramel, and then you're just like whacked in the face with this beautiful floral flavor. And she is so good at balancing the floral. She'll throw like hoja santa and other herbs into the ice cream.
Wow.
And it just like balances and rounds, not for any like alchemical reaction, but just simply for the fact that there's another flavor that you don't normally expect that's like kind of humming in the background as a little baseline. It's beautiful. So I made just a straight fresh bay leaf ice cream, just sweet cream, bay leaf, steeped the bay leaves, gently heated them, strained it off, made an ice cream base.
Yum.
It was delicious. And I also had that at Union restaurant in Pasadena.
Oh, wow. I love Union. Shout out to Union for having one of the best meatballs of my life. Best collards of my life.
And yeah, they just made this bay leaf ice cream. And like I was talking about, I mean, as much as I crapped on bay leaves earlier saying they're useless, they are a freaking beautiful flavor. One of the best, coolest ingredients when you let them shine. There's another dessert. They take bay leaves. I can't remember where I saw this. It might be a
panna cotta.
That'd be nice.
Was that it? No, that's the one I saw.
No, they actually dip bay leaves into like a kind of donut batter and then fry them.
Oh.
And you just scrape the donut batter off of your teeth and you're left with this kind of
lightly
menthol sort of flavor. And it's freaking gorgeous.
Is this
bay leaves are beautiful.
Is this like an El Bulli or something?
Oh, yes, I've been to El Bulli, the $9 million a person restaurant that may have closed.
That sounds like something that would be at like a astronomical restaurant like that. So I think what we've gathered is that bay leaf really shines in desserts, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, I think bay leaf shines in desserts probably because there's fewer ingredients to like really...
Maybe sugar helps. Maybe the sugar and the vanillas and the oranges help...
I think so.
Help raise the flavor instead of mute it if you were to use like basil or thyme or garlic.
Yeah, I think what it is that there's so few herbs that people use in dessert. Like typically, I mean, I know I've had, you know, lemon, thyme, verbena, and tarragon, yada, yada. But I think there's so few herbs that people use in dessert, so it's a more unexpected flavor.
Yeah.
But also where it really shines in simplicity, and shout out to Angela Davis, the Kitchenista.
Oh, she's the best.
Fantastic recipe developer, food
blogger.
Amazing. Her recipes have never steered me wrong. Oh, God, that roasted mango pie. Sorry, I'm going to get distracted. She was talking about bay leaves recently on Twitter, saying if you want to taste the difference between bay leaves, just make a pot of rice and then make a pot of rice with a couple bay leaves thrown in.
Mm.
And I've had that before. Like, I've actually had rice that was aged with bay leaves. and then cooked with bay leaves, and it's just delightful and fragrant. She recommended the same with grits.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, think about anytime you add one ingredient to rice, mm-hmm. which, like, one of my favorite things is jeera rice from India.
Sure.
The toasted cumin seeds, seed.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's gorgeous. Just, it elevates the rice. I mean, rice is a vessel for flavor. And if mm-hmm. you just add one ingredient to that, you're going to taste it so, so, so much, as opposed to, like, you know, I don't know, adding a bay leaf to your buffalo chicken dip. Which is probably delicious.
I don't know why you would add a bay leaf to buffalo chicken dip.
Add a bay leaf to everything, Nicole.
Oh my gosh.
Because the government needs to watch.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
You know what I want to do? I want to make a tea out of bay leaves and see, like, really what the pure, unadulterated flavor of it alone is.
You never done that?
No, have you done that?
Yes.
You've made a tea out of bay leaves?
Of course I have. Why wouldn't you?
What kind of pretentious hoi polloi are you talking about?
I'm a fan, like, the way that you are a fan of immersing yourself in frightening birds, I am a fan of doing little experiments. So I remember when people started asking me, do bay leaves do anything? I thought, like, well, let's taste some water, taste some bay leaves with water to see what it actually tastes like.
Interesting, interesting.
Yeah, and it's almost, God, I don't know, eucalyptus might be a little, what a weird flavor. What am I, a koala?
Pretty much.
What am I, a guy who knows one fact about koalas, which is that they eat eucalyptus
leaves?
quick aside, this whole podcast is aside, so I don't think I need to say quick aside. I was in the checkout line at Whole Foods with Julia, and she was like, oh, I meant to get eucalyptus. Can you go to the plant section and get eucalyptus?
Does she tie it in the shower?
Yeah.
Ugh,
dude,
I knew
okay,
it.
Hold on. I was a doubter at first.
I knew it.
I was a doubter at first, and then I walked into our bathroom after she put the eucalyptus plants up, and I was like, this smells like a residential Marriott. Huh. I've never been to a spa, so I've literally never been to a spa. So my only reference is a Marriott hotel.
No, it's pretty good.
And it smelled like a Marriott bathroom, and I was like, bro, this is nice.
Yeah, I know. You should do that with bay leaves.
Yes. Single guys out there who embody the idiot dads from yogurt commercials, because that's what I think I embody. Every yogurt commercial has, like, an idiot dad.
Oh, see, no. See, I think of infomercials that have the idiot dad that doesn't know how to hold 3 cups of coffee. So,
yeah, yeah. No, that.
Infomercial dads?
If you embody that energy as I do, live with a someone with a feminine touch. It helps. Wow, does it make your life better? Anyways, I walk outside into Whole Foods, and I'm just like, I have no idea what a eucalyptus plant looks like, and there was no one to ask, and so I just brought, like, a handful of things. Like, that's a cactus. And I'm like, I don't know. I can't hold cups of coffee.
Oh, man. No, it's okay.
I think there needs to be more bay leaf education in America,
yeah,
I'll tell you that.
I think that's what it is. I think we have been conditioned to say, bay leaf ain't nothing.
Yeah.
And but I think sure is something.
I think people need to start omitting bay leaves from more recipes so we can let them shine. And I feel the same way about another ingredient.
What's that?
Black pepper.
You know, Sammy Nostrat said that. She said that salt and pepper are two different flavors, and one doesn't need the other.
A chef buddy of mine, Chris Morningstar, said something to me. Salt is seasoning. Pepper is a spice. I actually watched him. Someone was – we were doing this catering event, and there was, like, one vegan person there, so we had to make one vegan dish. One of his cooks just cracked a bunch of black pepper on there, and he was like, I didn't have that in the recipe. And the guy was like, well, you said season everything. And he was like, salt is seasoning.
Correct.
Black pepper is a spice. I don't want that
salt
in there. And so he went in with tweezers and picked out.
Oh, that's a little bit much.
That was a little much.
Honey.
It was
honey,
a teaching moment. He was not like, much. Not like, no, I know there's, like, abuse in kitchens. That was, like, a reasonable thing to me.
To tweeze out pepper? If I
Perfection.
Josh, if I had a sous chef and they put pepper on something, I would make them go with tweezers and pick out the peppers.
I don't know.
I
think that's like a valuable teaching moment. Oh, just blow on the food. That's how pandemics start, Nicole. Cheese and rice.
You literally spit everywhere.
Yeah, I do spit it. The other day, I just drooled in a pan. Did you see that? I was holding a pan.
I think I might have disassociated from that point on.
I was holding a pan that I was going to use to like as a lid for another pot. And then I was trying to do the disturb thing from Down with the Sickness. And then as I went, it just drool fell out of my mouth into the pan. And I quickly ran to the sink and washed it.
My God. No, I don't think I was aware of that. If I were, I would have just, just shut down production for about like 45 minutes.
We need a deep clean. Josh's infected saliva is there.
That is so funny. No, that's a little excessive.
Okay, that might be excessive. But point is, what we're talking about, black pepper is used ubiquitously in so many recipes where it'll be like, add one crack of fresh pepper to a 9-pound soup. And it's like, you're not going to taste it. There might be that subtle hum in the background, whatever.
Yeah.
Thinking about little things like the Carl's Jr. chicken sandwich, where there's a ton of black pepper in there and you really taste it.
I haven't had a Carl's Jr. chicken sandwich in a really
long
time.
You're missing out. I think they
got
the best budget chicken sandwich. That's another podcast, but it's now like $1.99 because inflation.
Damn it.
I know. But it's really great. But that said,
curse you, America!
If you have like certain Indian dishes, like there's a Kerala style curry that I really love, and black pepper really takes a forefront, like it takes a starring role. It is one of the most beautiful spices, and I think we take it for granted, much like bay leaves, because it's used so much throughout so many recipes, right? And so I think when we start using black pepper and bay leaves, et cetera, it should be like focused. Focus on that one thing. Sometimes when you like add other spices, when you just cram the whole, I mean, I'm a big fan. You've seen me season my lunch chicken where I just dump in just like allspice, ginger,
pairings.
Well, I have a theory that all spices are the same.
No. Why?
They're not. But I think most spices tend to make food taste better.
Correct.
And more spices go together than you'd think. We were talking about this the other day where I was like, name me two spices that don't go together. And you kind of struggled a little bit.
Mustard. What was it? Mustard seed and...
What did we come up with? Like mustard and cinnamon were the two that we were like...
mustard and cinnamon, yeah.
But even that, I mean, black mustard seed and what do they call it? Ceylon cinnamon? Or is that like a weird colonial nickname? I don't know. But like black mustard seed and cinnamon both used a lot in curries. You know, like a lot of flavors can harmonize together. But that said, when you self-edit and you focus on one spice, paprika... As some say, paprika.
Why do you say paprika?
I just think it's hilarious
to
say
paprika. What do you gain from it?
It's like when people say culinary. It's like, you sound like an a-hole. Why do you do that? Paprika. Paprika is another thing that we take for granted, and we probably don't even know the flavor. I mean, I've said this before.
It's
the flavor
pepper.
Is red.
Yeah, red pepper.
Yeah,
tried red bell peppers?
Yeah, technically, it's not necessarily a bell pepper.
Uh-huh.
Alton Brown came at me on Twitter about this, and he's absolutely correct. But it's like a Hungarian version of pepper. They're actually made from a ton of different peppers that have been cultivated. In Hungary, and you know, they've now transferred to Spain and all that. But anyways, we take it for granted because, like, when I think of paprika, I think of the little red dust on a deviled egg that you're never going to taste.
Oh man, good times.
Good times. But
I haven't had a good deviled egg in like eons.
Can we just make deviled eggs for lunch?
Yeah.
I would love some deviled eggs.
You know, we have like 18 eggs.
Do we do? Dude, that's lunch for me. What are you going to eat?
I have a question.
I was going to say one more thing about paprika.
What is it?
Then you eat Hungarian chicken paprikash.
Can you make chicken paprikash today?
I thought we were having deviled eggs. Nicole, tell me what you want for lunch today.
I don't know what I want.
A little context. We're recording the podcast like 2 hours later than we normally record. And so Nicole's just hangry.
I'm hungry. Josh, I have a question.
Yeah, Nicole, I'm here to answer your questions.
Josh, why don't I see ground bay leaves on the shelves of America?
Do you know what contains ground bay leaves? I don't know why I went to that voice. Old Bay.
Shut
Old Bay
up.
Seasoning has ground bay leaves in it, but
no wonder it's called Old Bay because it has bay in it. Or is it because you get it on like the dock
of the
bay?
I think it's the Chesapeake Bay. I don't know. Also, I haven't fact checked this. I read one tweet saying that. I hope that person was accurate. But no, I think ground bay is probably just very overpowering. I'd imagine. But
I don't see it anywhere, and that upsets me. I want ground bay leaves on all the shelves of America.
Actually, we should start a petition. All our listeners out there, tweet at grocery, I want ground bay leaves and tag Nicole.
Tweet at Kroger. Tweet at Food for Less. Tweet at him all.
Okay, so my favorite bay leaf story in media, and this to me divided a generation of people who knew about food and did not, are all the tweets to Chipotle complaining. Have you seen these?
Yes.
Complaining that people found leaves in their beans and they were like, what'd you bring these beans under a tree and the leaf fell into it? And then everyone just absolutely dookied on these people. Saying like, no, that's a bay leaf. And also, that's another one of my favorite functions of bay leaves is in a big old pot of beans. But I also think bay leaves are a discount. Don't tell Nicole. Don't tell anyone I said this.
Tell me what's
I think bay leaves are a poor man's avocado leaf.
Oh, man. Well, people don't. Well, Josh, tell the people what the flavor of an avocado leaf is, because it's not as common as bay leaves. So.
No, it's not. So, but beans cooked with avocado leaf, it's very popular in Puebla and Oaxaca. It's what is it? Hoja de aguacate.
I think
the
so.
Name? That makes sense. Hoja means leaf, I think. Anyways, it is just this. I mean, beautiful, earthy. And fragrant. I mean, I almost don't have the vocabulary to describe it. Mm-hmm. But it's also used in this dish called michote de borrego, which is like lamb cooked almost like en papillote, like in a parcel. And that's maybe the best bite of food I've had in LA. I've probably said that about a couple different bites of food, but this is up there in the top five at least from the food truck Los Originales Tacos Árabes de Puebla. The longest named food truck in the game.
Sounds like it. Two lines?
Dude, it's just all across the truck. Like, it's seriously one line, 9 feet long. But that said, that was when I learned the beauty of avocado leaves. When I opened up this foil packet and I saw, like, these lamb chunks stained with chili, super tender and gelatinous, was resting on, like, a little bed of avocado leaves. And I picked up the avocado leaf and I went, and I sucked off the lamb juices from the avocado leaf. And it was just this, I mean, beautiful, like not super green, verdant herbal, but like this deep earthiness that was so, so, so beautiful. So I recommend if anyone wants to get some avocado leaves from Amazon and try that with the bay leaves, cook some rice, cook some beans, toss them in there.
Interesting.
That's my favorite non-really edible leaf.
Cool. Yeah. One time I found a dime in my Chipotle. I'm sorry.
No.
It wasn't a dime. It was a nickel.
It was supposed to be there. Sad flavor. You don't know about cooking nickels? Nicole, in the Azores, what they do, they have to import American nickels, so it gets very expensive to cook the cuttlefish. But what they do is they rub nickels. They tenderize the cuttlefish with the nickels. Talking about old wives' tales that, like, some of them...
Stone soup.
Wait, what was stone soup?
It's a lady who puts a... I don't know. There's, like, multiple, fables about stone soup. I think it's, like, an old lady puts stone in the soup, and then she cooks water and, like, tastes... Like, she's like, oh, there's flavor. There's stone in there. I don't know.
You ever heard about the cork, the wine cork and the octopus?
Yeah.
That's the thing. You throw the cork in, and it tenderizes the octopus inexplicably.
It doesn't, though.
No way it doesn't.
No way.
What are other cooking old wives' tales? So my Italian roommates, I mean, they would add, like, 3 grains of sugar to their tomato sauce, and they'd be like, it neutralizes the acid. My Nona said that. And I'm like, what does that mean to you? What do you think it means?
I think I brought this up once. Like, you can't, if a woman is on her, you know, menses, she can't make tomato sauce.
What?
Yeah, that's one. Like,
I don't think you brought that up. I feel like I would have remembered.
No, I definitely brought this up one time. You don't remember?
No, I've repressed
it. I was watching The Real Housewives of New Jersey, as I do. And then Teresa Giudice was saying, like, I can't make the tomato sauce because I'm on my menses. And then it was like an old wives' tale. You're not allowed to because you ruined the sauce.
What do you mean ruined? Like your hands? What are you mashing the sauce with your hands?
You can't make the sauce.
That's okay. Now we're not even getting into like old wives' tales. These are just like, oh, this is actual systemic sexism in the food world. But Jiro Ono of Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
Hot hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
So the women can't be sushi chefs because their hands get too hot from the menses. Is that what you're saying?
The menses.
And everyone's like,
I don't know a better word for it. I don't know a better word
like,
for it.
There's no science. And then it was like, do we cancel 94-year-old Jiro or do we let him live out his
days? I had
days?
A friend that was a pastry chef. She went to Le Cordon Bleu and she had hot hands. Like, she had hot hands.
Yeah.
So what she would do whenever she would do chocolate work, she would have a bowl of ice and she would dip her hands in a bowl of ice, keep them there for like 10 seconds, dry them off really quick, and then go back to like assembling her chocolate like masterpieces. And then she would have to put her hands in ice again. So maybe Chiro might have a point. I don't know, bro.
Next week on the podcast, does women got hot hands?
I mean, I have warm hands. I've been told that I have warm hands. I'm
just sweaty all the time.
Well, you're a little clammy, darling.
No, I'm not clammy. I'm oystery. I'm like a grilled oyster in the hand, just sweating oyster liquor.
You're muscly. Because you're muscly?
Oh, got him.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right, Nicole, we've heard what you and I have to say. Now it's time to find out what other wacky ideas are rattling out there in the Twitterverse. It's time for a segment we call...
Opinions are like casseroles.
Shh, it's a secret. And my secret is that I don't have underarm sweat or something. You ever see those commercials?
My secret? I handle my underarm sweat. What secret?
My secret? I got hot hands. I rub deodorant all over them. You ever deodorant other parts of your body that aren't your armpits?
No, but I recently got into the organic aluminum-free deodorant game.
Oh.
And I hate it. I don't like it. I'm sweaty.
Yeah, I get the one with the most Ed Hardy-like graphic design on it.
Cool.
I'm currently using Bear Glove by Old Spice. It's got a picture of a bear to let me know that it's for men because men like bears.
Yeah, so David and my dad both use the same kind of deodorant. It's called Swagger by Old Spice, and I don't like that.
Mm-mm-mm. Get them on Bear Glove. It smells like a sorority girl.
But I don't want them to smell like you.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, first up, we got at Dare Blau Elephant. Tomato juice is the same as tomato sauce, and you cannot change my mind. Mm. I agree with this. It's technically inaccurate, but the reason I agree with this is because then it verifies my theory that Bloody Marys are just liquored up Prego marinara sauce, and I don't like them.
Tomato juice and tomato sauce are cousins.
Yeah.
They're cousins. They're not the same thing, but they have, you know, Punnett squares, relation. Similar, not the same.
Yeah. Mendel. Mendel. Punnett squares. We both failed at a high school science in the 10th grade.
I'm telling you. Environmental sciences.
Talking about juice versus like puree, as someone who has screwed up so many recipes, because I've never owned a juicer.
Okay.
And who has screwed up so many recipes by thinking, I can just puree this and then strain it really fine. You can't. You can't a lot of times. Yeah, you can try and cheesecloth it. Juice is a whole thing. You're separating all of the pulp from all the liquid.
Correct.
It's so hard to do that any other way. So they are different. But no, I like this because it verifies my false thoughts, which is how we get into a lot of problems in society. Confirmation bias, baby.
Okay. B-Gage Fitness says, food is what the creator deems it is. A burger could be a pizza, just a bad one. Huh.
I like this.
As a person who constantly talks about the chef's intent, the chef's intent, the chef's intent. Mm-hmm. This is a good opinion, albeit an annoying one. This is annoying.
Incredibly pedantic in a way that I love.
Yeah. Exactly.
So someone gives you a pepperoni pizza and they go,
Enjoy your salad.
They go like, enjoy your salad. You're like, well, there's no lettuce. There's no dressing. If you said it was a salad, I want something crunchy and refreshing, maybe even a little bit healthful. And this is that. And they're like, no, it's a crouton with a cooked tomato salad on it and blah, blah, blah. All they've done is made a terrible salad.
Yeah.
And if they present it to you as a salad, you have to judge it. That's like Top Chef rules, right? They present like a steak might be overcooked. And then Tom Colicchio always comes in with, what was your intended doneness on the steak? And then you always look at the chef and I'm like, ooh, are they going to say mid-rare and I screwed up? Or are they going to try and do the old PR flip and hit him with like, I intended to make this steak well done, chef. And so you always got to judge my intent. I agree with this.
Me too.
At Samantha Gale 05. Canned tuna in beef top ramen, a delicacy.
For who?
Why beef?
Why?
I would prefer, I drop some canned tuna in the spicy shrimp, probably a delight.
That's what I was going to say. Or even like a vegetable based
The chili picante one, that's a good flavor.
I can't. The beef and tuna, It's like lamb and tuna fish.
Have you ever had vitello tonnato?
I had, actually, yes, I made it in school.
You made vitello, so explain what vitello tonnato is.
It is rare cooked veal that you shave super thin.
Is it veal tongue, or is it just veal, like breast or whatever?
I don't remember. It's some sort of veal, and then you make a very smooth tuna sauce.
It's like tuna salad with extra liquid in it.
Yeah, and then you like pepper on some like capers and like stuff like that. It's enjoyable. It's not my favorite thing in the world.
It's like, to me, one of the most bizarre food combos. That like, it's ultimately delicious. But kind of in a disconcerting way.
It's like not my go-to dish. It's not I don't think it's like a delicious meal. It's something that I've tried once. Maybe we'll try again whenever I'm, I don't know, Croatia, Italy, wherever it's from.
Probably.
Yeah, and like I'll never eat it again.
Yeah.
It's not a soul satisfying dish for me.
I agree with that. Yeah. But that said, there's precedent for cow meat, albeit a baby cow, with tuna, beef top ramen and tuna. There is historical precedent for this. Speaking of pedantic and annoying, hi, my name's Josh.
Okay.
At Advaith Krishnan, mango juice will always be the queen of all juices. Other juices are just peasants tryharding. I love the use of tryharding as a verb.
Mango juice. I don't like drinking juice like that.
Too thick.
I don't like drinking juice like on its own.
Really?
I'm not a juice drinker. Never been a juice drinker.
At all? Even like fancy juice? Yeah, I saw you drink juice yesterday.
Oh, no, well, that's...
You got like a jug of an orange carrot thing.
Well, that's because I needed it.
Yeah, it's like...
No. Like singular juices, I don't enjoy.
And
like,
you need a blend.
I need a blend. But like, again, that's a fresh... This is so bougie of me. Like fresh pressed juices.
Yeah,
like,
well, you're paying to feel good about yourself when you do that, right?
But like, like solo juices, like from concentrate, like I can't do unless it's grapefruit juice. Because I love grapefruit juice and I sprinkle a little bit of salt in there so my blood pressure doesn't go all out of whack. Really good. I love that.
My problem with mango juice is that it's simply too thick. Mango is one of the most beautiful fruits. Possibly
it really
is. I mean, what a freaking delight.
Gorgeous.
That said, the juice to me, if I'm drinking juices, I want to be like refreshed, you know? And there's something where mango juice is between food and drink.
Yeah.
And I know I already talked about how drinks don't exist, but mango juice, it's too thick. It's like a smoothie for me. Give me a good mango aid and I'm down. No, king of juices, honeydew juice. What a crappy opinion that I stand by. I love honeydew juice.
Anytime my dad's diverticulitis acts up, we give him cantaloupe juice.
My mouth is salivating thinking about cantaloupe and honeydew juice. Melons are great.
Cantaloupe juice is really good. Pro tip, put like a thimble of rose water in it. Ugh, you're done.
That sounds great. I'm big into buying expensive melons.
Yeah.
At Whole Foods. I'll be like, never heard of that melon, but it's $8 a pound and this weighs 4 pounds. Let's buy this $30 melon. Screw it.
The word melon gives me goosebumps in a weird way.
Why?
I don't like it. I don't like the word melon. Okay. Phil Ray says, a Mexican hot chocolate will always be better than anything European. So I don't know if you've ever had chocolat chaud?
Chocolat chaud.
Chocolat chaud.
Chocolat chaud.
A chocolat chaud or a hot chocolate is French-style hot chocolate. It's very thick, very luxurious.
Mm-hmm. We call it drinking chocolate.
It's one of my favorite things. When I worked at a chocolate store, we used to make it all the time. And I would make it special. I'd make it super thick for like the patrons I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also add cream in there for them. So I'd make it really luxurious and really fancy. I love Mexican hot chocolate, though. The cinnamon and the rough raw sugar.
Yeah.
It's making my mouth out. It's two different experiences.
I love eating that like unrefined. There's a brand. I think it's called Chocolatl, which is like the Nahuatl word for chocolate.
Yeah, is it the disc?
The disc, yeah. That kind of like rough, unrefined chocolate before a ton of dairy was added to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that. I think it lets the cocoa shine. You get a little bit of that spice. It plays on the bitterness. I've always wanted to try the original, like, so chocolate, right, in the Aztec Empire was, I mean, kind of used like a coffee in a way.
Yeah.
It was a drink because chocolate has caffeine in it. And so it was a drink made with chocolate and something called agua de miel, I believe.
Correct.
That it was sweetened with. And it's this kind of like, you know, very sort of bitter, earthy, chocolatey drink that I've always wanted to try the original version of. And it was actually a coffee shop. I believe it was a community-run coffee shop in East LA that was making it. But I think they've since closed down. But I've always really wanted to try it because I'm not a super fan of just like crazy dark, like European dark chocolate bars, you know, where you get all the kind of dairy fat. But I love that like expression of cacao.
Yes.
And I would really want to try that drink. So yeah, I agree with you. Mexican hot chocolate rules.
Yeah, you have to use like a molonillo or whatever to mix it.
The Molina?
It looks like a rattle, and it's like multiple like thicknesses of discs. And
yeah,
it's like a wooden
yeah.
thing, and you just kind of like rub it between your hands, and it like makes this like froths the milk for you, and it incorporates air into the chocolate, and it makes just this beautiful texture.
All right, at Ugh Nikki, Dayton style pizza not being in the best pizza styles is a crime.
Let me talk
about regional Ohio food loves. I have so.
What is it? I don't know what Dayton style.
I once pitched a GMM episode that was it was like the international dartboard game, except it was just a map of Ohio, and they had to guess which version of chili and macaroni originated in what city.
That's so
because
silly.
There are three versions of chili with noodles. There's like Cincinnati skyline. There's Columbus style Johnny Marzetti.
What is
the dish? And then there's like Cleveland chili mac, which I had on my recruit trip to Case Western Reserve University. I almost went to school in Cleveland. I had a really lovely trip there. Nice school. Their business school is designed by Frank Gehry.
Who?
The dude who did Disney Concert Hall. His buildings look like crumpled up balls of foil.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, yeah. He designed the Case Western Reserve Business School. Who knew? Anyways, point is,
regional. What does this have to do with pizza?
Regional Ohio food insanities are one of my favorite things. There's something called Ohio Valley Pizza. And I don't know what it is. Dayton style pizza, I don't know what it is. I'm excited to find out. It probably just has like,
okay,
here's one processed provolone cheese that we make in Dayton.
Okay, Dayton style pizza, thin crust pizza that's cut into squares rather than slices.
Oh, wow.
Dough and, okay, this is not a good explanation. I don't know what Dayton pizza is, and if you want to tell me what Dayton pizza is, please tweet us, because I don't want to Google it right
now. I don't doubt that you believe it's the best style of pizza. go Dayton Flyers.
Yeah. Okay. Maddie Schultz says, mayonnaise is only good mixed with ketchup. Hashtag pink mayonnaise. That's our new band name.
Pink mayonnaise?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're like a Riot Girl band.
Yeah, exactly. Pink mayo, pink mayo. That's
and I'll come in there, it's like, ah! It's kind of yelling in the background, you know? we'll be an impressive gender integrated Riot Girl band where I'm like, and I'm Josh.
I know how to play the bass.
We're Pink Mayonnaise and we're for the liberation of all women. And I'm like, and I'm Josh. I helped. You play bass?
I used to play double bass, classically trained.
Did you know that about me? Classically trained. Jeff, classically trained.
I used to play with a bow. I would just strum it. And I did that for all of a year, and then I stopped.
Wow.
But I could still probably strum a bass, if I remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I did 1 year of violin when I was 9, but I was so bad because we couldn't afford to rosin my bow and my stuff was all broken. And so at concerts, I didn't want to drag everybody down. So I would just hold the bow above the violin and just not touch it.
Were you good?
No, I literally wouldn't play. I was so bad that at the concerts, I wouldn't even play it. I'd just act like I did.
Yeah.
I'd sit in back so no one saw me.
Was it an extracurricular class?
It was mandatory. We had to pick up an instrument in fourth grade. And it was literally violin or recorder.
You picked violin.
And I was like, screw it. Let's be cultured. I'm 9. You know, let's learn about the world through the violin.
I think I was in 7th grade and I would go to school at 5:50 a.m. to learn how to play the double bass. like a dork.
Oh, that's abuse. Picking out pepper from a dish isn't abuse. That's abuse. Making a kid go to school to play double bass.
No, I wanted
bass.
To do it. I wanted to do it. And I picked the double bass because you want to know why?
What?
I wanted to be different. I didn't want to be a girl playing the violin or the viola. And the cello? Who cares about the cello?
No
I
want
to be
the
double bass girl.
Are you yo-yo ma?
More like yo-yo no.
Oh, God. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. At Rad Red4, why eat alligator when chicken exists?
Well,
I don't know.
Did
an alligator attack you or did a chicken attack you? How did you come upon this alligator?
Because everyone says alligator tastes just like chicken.
It kind of, you've eaten alligator?
Yes. One time I went to an Armenian wedding and they had this alligator, cooked alligator, wrapped around the trunk of a tree, as a design, and people were eating it.
Alligator, forgive my ignorance, alligators are Armenian, correct? They are, I believe, native to the United States,
yeah.
And pretty much the U.S. only.
Yes, but I went to an Armenian wedding with my dad when I was 7, and then they just cut the outside of it, and then people were going with tongs and picking the meat out, and then I asked my dad if I could try it, and he said no. And he
that's like something a
away.
Colombian drug lord does at
really
their
cool.
wedding. That's
yeah,
a flex.
Really rad.
That's
really
a flex.
Rad. It was really cool.
Dang, was it good?
I didn't try it. I was 7, and my dad was no. you're not trying alligator.
Are alligators kosher? Did that come up in the Torah?
I don't think so because they're scaly.
Probably.
I don't know. Maggie? Our resident rabbi?
I had a friend bring back alligator from like the Florida Gulf Coast. It's fine. It's fine.
I've had alligator jerky before. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. Alligator's fine. I guess if you are somebody who gets off on eating something that could kill you, which I'm not. I mean, technically a cow could kill you. Yeah, you know, I got my thrills eating cow, knowing it
can
kill me.
Can a cow kill you?
Of course a cow can kill you. A cow falls on you? There's probably more.
So if you're cow tipping and then you're like laying on the side of the cow, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Cows can kill you. You can drown in their poo. There was a guy that drowned in elephant poo. He was underneath an elephant. Elephant pooed right on him.
I hate this
and
podcast.
And drowned in it. I love this podcast. The people love the podcast, Nicole. We have to keep doing the podcast. And on that note, thank you for listening to A Hot Dog is a Sandwich. If you want to hear more from us here in the Mythical Kitchen, we got new episodes for you every Wednesday.
If you want to be featured on Opinions Are Like Casseroles, you can hit us up on Twitter at Mythical Chef or and Henizada with the hashtag Opinion Casserole.
And for more Mythical Kitchen, check us out on YouTube. We launch new videos every week.
And of course, if you want to share pictures of your dishes, hit us up on Instagram at what, Josh? At what?
Oh, Nicole, the Instagram?
Yeah.
You're talking about the Instagram?
Yeah,
that's at Mythical Kitchen.
See you next time.
Bye.